just started to discuss a little bit of Molech yesterday. Molech is considered one of the most heinous forms of Avodah Zarah, even though originally in the Mishnah we talked about Avodah Zarah and Molech being listed separately, which raised the possibility that Molech wasn't formally Avodah Zarah, but was just something that we call Chukos Avodas HaKochavim, a practice that they had. And the Mishnah's, what's that? It was very popular. Okay, very good. So Bietz is feeling it tonight. So so we spoke about how in the Mishnah there are two different elements that one has to violate for a person to actually be in violation of Chayav Skila. One of them is the process of Ha'avara or Mesira, to give one's child over to the Kohanim of Avodah Zarah, the people who were, so to speak, in charge of the Molech. And then the way the Rambam describes it actually in the Mishnah Torah is then they would hand the child back to the father, and the child would take the father by the legs, I kid you not, and the fire would be burning, and he would sort of wave the child over the fire, not putting the child into the fire, but that was the way that Molech was worshipped as in Avodah Zarah. So that, again, are the two components, the Havara, the Mesira to the Kohane HaMolech, and then the process of actually passing the child through the fire. So there's, you know, two different forms of passing children through the fire that we talk about when we talk about the ancient Canaanite practices. One of them, as we mentioned last night, is actually burning the child in the fire, which I guess is worse, right? And here we're talking about just actually passing the child through the fire, but not actually killing the child. So that is the process of Molech. There are two different parts of the process. The next subject in the Mishnah has to do with Ov and Yidoni. So again, those were listed in the Mishnah as Chiyuvei Skila. So Ov is a sort of a kind of a subcategory of sorcery, as is Yidoni. Ov appears in one of two different ways. Either it's taking a skull after all of the flesh is no longer on it, so just a plain skull, and engaging in some kind of a process by which one engages the skull and the skull begins to speak somehow, or to take an element from a dead body and to place it underneath one's arm and then it would speak from there. That's any practitioner of Ov. And by the way, this is very popular. Shaul had to, in Sefer Shmuel, it's described, we're learning Sefer Shmuel this year, had undertake a massive campaign to wipe out Ov from the land of Israel. So it may not sound so popular to you, but it was actually very common back then. And the Gemara Masechta Sanhedrin, towards the very end of the Masechta, reminds us that during the period when Avodah Zarah was common, there was a profound Yetzer Hara for it. So it's not really fair. I mean, it sounds facetious to us. Like, you know, who would want to commune with a skull? Certainly to, you know, commune with a skull underneath somebody's arm, or a piece of bone underneath somebody's arm. But these were things that, you know, were very, very common. Yidoni is related to Ov in the sense that it's a bone. There's actually different theories as to what Yidoni is. Some people think it's a kind of a bird. Some people think, the Bartanura quotes the view that it was an animal that looked like a human being, just like a fetus is connected to its mother by an umbilical cord. Get this, the Bartanura thinks that the Yidoni was sort of an animal that looked like a human being that's connected to the ground by a kind of an umbilical cord. So if you would sever the umbilical cord, then it would sort of pass away, and you would take a bone from this Yidoni, and you would put it in your mouth, and the bone would somehow begin to speak and to communicate. So that is considered a chi of skila as well, ba'al ov v'yidoni. So those are in terms of the practitioners. Now you'd say, well, what was this for exactly? So this is a way of people who, you know, didn't know what to do. So nowadays we have psychiatrists and psychologists and psychotherapists, and people can talk to them in terms of gaining advice. Remember, they didn't have that back then. So people would... Yeah, people, right. Yeah, exactly. You know, you didn't have it as much here, but, you know, when I was living in this city, you know, if you sort of look around and look up, you look down, you could find the... Yeah, it's still popular in different ways. I don't think anybody's quite doing it with skulls and, you know, bones underneath their arms, or, you know, animals that look like human beings attached by an umbilical cord to the ground. But, you know, it's all on a spectrum. I think Rabbi is right about that. So those are in terms of the practitioners. But people would go and visit them for advice as to the future. Maybe which real estate should I invest in? Maybe which, spouse should I seek out? So those who would go and visit them are not chayiv skila, because the Torah speaks about that in terms of a lav, that an individual is not allowed to be doresh ov v'yidoni. But again, that is only a lav, that's a chayiv malkus. So the actual practitioners of ov and yidoni are liable for skila. Those who seek out the guidance of a Baal Ov or a Baal Yidoni, they're only liable at the level of a lav, and not in terms of skila. Now, with the irony, of course, I mentioned, and this is a good story to conclude with, the irony I mentioned that Shaul had set out on a campaign to eliminate all of the Ov from the land of Israel because it was so common. So at the very end of his life, the Torah tells us the night before that he would die in battle against the Plishtim, he actually sought out a woman who was a practitioner of Ov, a Ba'alat Ov. And anybody want to guess who he spoke with? Who did he want to speak with? Shaul, the king, the night before he died. Exactly right. He brought up Shmuel, and Shmuel says, "Why did you bother me?" And Shaul said, "You know, I'm concerned." He was nervous about the battle with the Plishtim. And Shmuel says, "You should be. You should be, because you're going to be with me by tomorrow." V'kachava, and that's exactly what happened, that Shaul and his sons, the entire Jewish people, suffered a massive defeat at the hands of the Plishtim. So this was, of course, you know, a terrible irony that Shaul, who had campaigned his life against the Ov, and that was so common in the land of Israel, ended up, you know, the night before he died, seeking out the Ov, because, you know, he was so desperate, he had nobody left to turn to. And it was a terrible fall for somebody who was described earlier by the Navi as Mishechvo Vamala Gavo Mikol Am, somebody who had once stood out so prominently amongst the Jewish people, had suffered such a catastrophic fall from his position. So again, just to review what we spoke about tonight, we talked about Molech, not as actually the process of burning, but Molech as a process of taking a child, handing the child over to the Kohan, and the Kohan would hand the child back to the father, and passing the child over the fire, the Rambam says, by the legs in the Mishnah Torah. Then we talked about Ov and Yidoni, and we introduced a very important distinction. Those who are the practitioners, those who actually take the skull and interact with it, or take the bone and put it underneath their arm, or take the bone, in the case of Yidoni, and put it into their mouth, whatever it is. So they're Chayav Skila, but people who turn towards them, Al Tifnu El Ha'ovos Ve'El Ha'Yidonim, people who are looking for that guidance, the Torah doesn't consider that as severe because they're not the ones who are involved in this kind of an idolatrous practice directly. They're simply seeking out guidance, and even though that's not acceptable, that's certainly beyond the pale, it's not considered as grave a violation as being a practitioner of Ov or Yidoni. I think it's also important to emphasize, as I mentioned very briefly, that even though we hear these things and think to ourselves, well, you know, I've never really experienced the desire to do that. You know, we don't meet too many people who are involved in Ov and Yidoni. It's important to remember that, you know, beautiful Gemara in Masechta Sanhedrin towards the very end, where Menashe, who was one of the most wicked kings who ever lived, he was the son of he was the son of Chizkiyahu, or excuse me, he was the father of Chizkiyahu. He was, you know, a very, very wicked king, and he had a terrible impact on the Jewish people. Later on in his life, he did tshuva, but Menashe was also a great Torah scholar. And so there's a scene at the end of the Gemara in Masechta Sanhedrin where Rav Ashi, if I remember correctly, doesn't know a certain halacha and hilchos brachos. He doesn't know where exactly one should make the bracha, birkas Hamotzi lechem in haaretz, in terms of a halacha called bitzias apas, from where does one start to eat? And Menashe says, you know, it's amazing to me how you're so ignorant, and you know, you don't know these halachos. And Rav Ashi says, you know, it's amazing to me, you know, how you know these halachos, and yet you were involved in so many terrible things, including avodah zarah in the most intensive way. And Menashe says to Rav Ashi, you know, don't judge. You weren't around in my generation, but had you been around in my generation, you would have been chasing after Avodah Zarah with your tail between your legs. In other words, you couldn't run fast enough to the house of Avodah Zarah. So Kal v'chomer for us, that we can't really understand what exactly the Yetzer Hara, the impulse towards Avodah Zara, was. There is a Gemara, Masechta Yoma, Daf Samachtas, that tells us that after the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, the Jewish people were simply incapable of managing the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zara. They tavened to God and they said, look, normally the rule is Lo Bashamayim, normally, you know, we have free will, Bechira Chavshis, that it's our responsibility to observe the Torah and the mitzvos, and, you know, God is not going to do it for us. But God, we've been defeated. Okay, the verdict is in, and Avodah Zarah is just too difficult for us as the Jewish people to resist, so we're going to need your help with it. And God says, okay, ani maskim, I'll take away the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah. So it's something that we have a difficult time relating to in our generation. Now, that doesn't mean it wasn't a very serious draw, as you can see from the story of Shaul that I told you, that the night before he dies, even though he personally was the architect of the greatest anti-Ove campaign, you know, since the days of Nancy Reagan, just say no to Ove. So the, you know, Shaul himself felt the need to seek out the Baalat Ove before the battle against the Plishtim. It just gives you a sense of what the attraction really was, and the Torah has to tell us, Al tifnu el ha'ovos ve'el ha'yidonim, it's for a reason. It's because there were many people, and it was a very widespread practice, so it's not really fair for us to judge. Al tadin es chavercha ad shetagia limkomo, ve'ad shetagia ledoro, ad shetagia letkufato. We can't judge from our generation what things were like in a different generation and in a different time.